Welcome to the Seedman Mentorship Podcast. This is your captain speaking. On this show, we navigate the voyage of life through the lens of Lakers, some who have just come aboard and others who are well underway. We will speak with experts who will show us the ropes, help us plot a course, and recount exhilarating tales of uncharted territory, all while promoting lifelong learning agility and a culture of mentorship. Welcome to the Seedman Mentorship Podcast. I'm Jerry Cook. Today in the studio, I get to welcome one of the legends. We have a lot of legends on the show, but this is a more recent legend. A person who really helped the development of the Seedman Mentorship Program in its state. I'm welcoming to the show the fabulous Jillian Vinatelli. Jillian, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jerry. Happy to be here.
Jillian, you were there at the beginning. It was your junior year where we recruited you?
Yeah.
So the Seedman Professional Mentorship Program, which was only juniors and seniors paired with professionals at that time, we added on a system where we brought in freshmen and sophomores who are going to be mentored by juniors and seniors. You were part of CEI, College Entrepreneurship and Innovation, right? So that's a center within Seedman that helps students and entrepreneurs who want to develop. You do pitch competitions, you develop things, you had your own business. Mm-hmm. You're a very advanced Seedman. You were light years ahead of where I was. I was busy playing Dungeons and Dragons. You were busy running actual businesses in undergrad. So way ahead of me. But you came on board and said, hey, I'm willing to help out with the administration. And some of the things that we do today are because of Jillian Vinatelli. So our event schedule is because of Jillian. Some of the ways that we book rooms, do things, part of our marketing, our SMP handbook is Jillian Vinatelli, right? So you're what's it feel like to, number one, let me back up. Why did you volunteer to do all these things in college? I'm gonna read your accolades here in a minute, but you're so busy. I remember the talk around Seedman was, hey, you know that Jillian person? Yeah, when's she gonna burn out? We're worried about Jillian doing too much.
Well, little did I know at that first encounter with you, Jerry, when I said, hey, let me know if I can help with any of the mentorship, you know, program as you're looking to expand with students. It's, you know, something I'm passionate about, that I would be as involved and get to be a part of so many incredible aspects of the program and still continue to be involved as an alumni, which is even more incredible and meaningful and impactful in different ways. I just always have enjoyed being a part of communities and being able to support those around me. And so for me, I was always busy in school, but it never felt busy to me because it was all very purposeful. It was filling my cup up, being able to be a part of all these different organizations. And I still to this day, one of the first things I did after graduating was look at what not the same as a university club, but the equal of that in the professional world. What are those organizations that I can be a part of that fill my cup through purposeful work and getting to support people and work with people and collaborate? I've never seen busy as burnout yet, at least. And I always say busy is better than bored anyways. So 24 hours in a day, why not make the most of them?
You certainly did with your time at Seedman. So I'm gonna rattle up your accolade list here, right? 2 years in the Seedman Mentorship Program, including the foundation. You couldn't do more than that. There was only two.
Unfortunately not.
You were the first cohort leader that we had that an experiment where we put you with multiple mentees, and you did a project together with your mentees. So you managed multiple mentees, did a project with them, and really broke the groundwork for that to be a thing that we still do today. You won multiple pitched you placed well in multiple pitch competitions with CEI, which is not easy to do. Summa cum laude graduation, so high honors there. The IMGV Award, Peer Mentor of the Year, both in 22 and 23, highest honors there in Seedman Mentorship. Would have won Stoles and Cores had we had them back then. Dean's List every single year of your time. In my time in a grant, I didn't want the dean to know who I was. Like, I had President Lubbers in that chair, my president, and I said, President Lubbers, I figured you were a principal, not a president. And if you listen to that episode, he said, well, that's your mistake, Jerry, and probably was. Excellence in discipline. This is the highest honor Seidman has academically for a student. So they choose one student per discipline, in highest in discipline and entrepreneurship, which I think would be difficult because I don't see, maybe I'm going to get in trouble for this, but I'm going to say it. I'm looking down at the producer, like, should I say this or not? I'm looking at Dylan. I don't know. In my simple little mind, accounting, they're like, okay, well, who's, you know, the best accounting student? Sounds like it's a pretty easy way to figure out. The best entrepreneur student sounds a little bit, those are the people who want to fight. Those are the people who want to compete. Like, you're taking the most competitive people, you're putting them in the Thunderdome, and you're trying to decide which one's best. So in my mind, that's a hard thing to do. And what an honor.
Yeah, that one especially surprised me. Not something that I thought I'd get. And that's something that I still feel like I was truthfully the one to deserve it, because I look at so many of the incredible entrepreneurs and innovators that I pretty much lived at the CEI, so that I spent most of my time at Grand Valley with, who have phenomenal businesses that are doing much more impactful work than I believe mine to be. And I'm still very honored that of all the students and the organizations that existed and came through CEI, and even just students who didn't have a business but just embodied what it meant to have that entrepreneurial spirit. I think of all the things I've done in college and been a part of, that has always been the most important and meaningful to me. And I carry that with me every day. Even when things get a little tough, I'm like, you know, they believed in me and they saw something in me for this excellence in a discipline. And you know, that means something to me, and I've never taken that honor for granted.
Well, certainly well earned. I will share with you that on the way over to the studio this morning, I ran into Dr. Ganakura, some other people, and I said, they said, like, what are you doing here? And I said, well, I work here, but I'm on my way over to the studio to interview Jillian. And they're like, oh, tell Jillian. I said, hi, what time is it? Can I see Jillian? I'm like, no, I get Jillian first, and then other people can have some Jillian time. I mentioned this earlier. You were not only a student at Seidman College of Business, but you were a business owner. You're doing business with your business, Grandin Wells. Tell us about that.
Yeah. I'll probably end up going down a rabbit hole, and I'll try not to, but my whole family has their own business, whether it's a small business, it's a medium business, or they're starting new business lines or departments in their corporate organization. So that entrepreneurialness has always been in my family, dating back to my great-grandmother, who immigrated here from Armenia, and they started their family cleaners, and she took that over and started her own. So that, trying not to go down a rabbit hole, that legacy of having your own something is just kind of an expectation. And for me, I didn't really know what the 77 Idea Lab Accelerator was, but I saw an application. I'm notorious for saying yes to everything. Blessing and a curse, but I say yes to everything. And the only idea I had was tangible was this event planning. I'm like, you know, I worked with a planner. I've been a part of weddings, helped my family plan their weddings. I've helped with corporate event planning for all my family companies. I'm like, this could be cool. And there's a lot of stuff that's not being done all that great that frankly think my type A OCD personality could probably do a little bit better. So I said yes to the entrepreneurship opportunity. And that was it. It for me, again, like everything I try to do, I try to fill my time with meaningful, purposeful, cup-filling activities. And wedding planning is a lifestyle business, but for me it was very, very purposeful, because you would have the grandma that comes up to you and it's like, I haven't seen my family in years. And, or the mother who's like, I haven't, you know, gotten my family from all over the country together for an event once, and it was not stressful and everything went to plan. Like, thank you so much. And family to me is my number one value through and through. And I've also experienced a lot of loss in family. So I've learned to realize the magnitude of having those moments all together and how much it means. And if I can be a little part of that day to make sure that they just get to be present in the moment with each other, then that is more than enough motivation for me to start my own business. It's not something big at the moment, but it's purposeful work that fills my cup even when the usual life tendencies happen and I get overwhelmed or stressed or there is bad news. Like, I have this purposeful cup filling thing that I can always turn to.
So I think of you as the Laker on the horizon. I'm using my nautical thing here, but you're the person who is just ahead of us. And I know that there's a ton of students every year who are looking for programming, specifically a mentorship around, man, what's the transition like? What's next? What I wish I would have known. And you've come and spoke to classes that I was either an instructor for or other folks doing this exact thing. And I love your fresh perspective. So we asked our producer, who's a student, to ask some questions for what's that like. But to set this up, succinctly kind of take us through that last part. From commencement, you walk across the stage to that transition. What was that like? What were the fears you had? Which ones were just unfounded fears? And which ones, what was really unexpected? Kind of an overview. And then I'll ask you very specifics about this in just a second.
Sounds good. It's very interesting transition because you walk across the stage, you're at a high, you've accomplished something monumental, and you know, the degree is the one big monumental accomplishment, but there's also all the other little ones that are leading up to that. And you're excited, you're optimistic about what the future has in store for you. And then you kind of move back home or you move back away from your school apartment. And then it's kind of like, oh, I'm not going back to school. This is a little bit strange. And you start a job, and the first like summer was fine because usually you go to school, you move home, or you move to another place, and you start an internship, and you go back to school in the fall. And then fall came, and I was still at that internship, which not an internship, but it was my new career path. But in that lapse between walking the stage and starting that position, there were so many fears. And some of those were, did I major in the right thing? Did I pick the right career path for me? Is it the right industry? Am I good enough for what I signed up for? And I think those fears are valid because there's fear in what you don't know, but there's also optimism and curiosity for what you don't know. And I think all of those fears are natural, and we all have them and go through them. And the important thing is to not get stuck in fears being scary and focus on the fear of unknown being something exciting and to be curious for what's to come. I say that as also a reminder to myself because there's now times where I still have some of those fears rising up about my career path. And I go back to that moment of crossing the stage and just so optimistic and excited for what's to come. And my role, it was exciting to me. It's in innovation and entrepreneurship, and I get to work with cool people and build really cool things and solve meaningful problems. Like, I was so excited, and that still fuels me today. But there's absolutely moments where it's like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? I think I'm good enough, but that learning curve, for me at least, was really hard. And I think part of that is you're in school for a long time, from preschool, if you did daycare before that, elementary, middle school, high school, college, if you go into a master's or a doctorate, like, you get really good at school because you've had all these years behind you of learning what comes next. And it's a very structured plan of you go from this grade to this grade to this grade. And college is the first introduction of a little bit of ooey gooeyness, and you get to pick now what classes are and when you take the classes and what you do. And then you move into the professional world, and it's exponentially different structure wise. It's different routines, it's a different amount of structure, there's more responsibilities. And graduating, I was aware that that transition was going to exist, but I think I was not fully anticipating how big that transition would be. Because I loved school and I was a nerd. So what some people saw as work in school, I just enjoyed. And yes, I still enjoy my work and what I do, but it's very different from school. And for me, that was the most awkward learning curve, the most uncomfortable part of graduating and transitioning, is moving from that structure of school into now this professional role. And I'm still learning how to navigate that today.
So let me ask you some more specific questions now about the that you set that up. So the students and our illustrious producer has, you know, submitted, I think, great follow-up questions to this. I'm nervous about the transition from college to work life. What's the best? So it sounds like we're picking one. What's the best piece of advice?
Speaking from experience, build your personal board of advisors and mentors. I think in that transition, it's phenomenal to have people outside of your circle of friends and family, and sometimes even coworkers, to be able to lean on. And there's so many different types of mentors that you can have in your life. There's mentors that just help you navigate personal and professional balance. There's mentors that help you with very specific skills to what's going to be your new roles. I'm always honored when a student reaches out to me to be that mentor in the transition of, hey, you just did this and I know you're still going through it, but I think it would be nice, you know, to be able to go to you and say, hey, because sometimes you just need to feel validated in your concerns and your worries. There, Brooke, I had another phenomenal mentor out of the CMA mentorship program. I reached out to her after my first couple months. I'm like, hey, this transition is uncomfortable. Like, can I just chat with you and see how your experience was? And so I think in making that transition, having a very strong support system around you of different areas of your life. There's mentors that I can go to when personally, like I said, I'm struggling with the balance of family and working. And then there's very specific skills to this new role that are just new to me that I sought mentors in so that I could get some additional education. And then even internally, it's phenomenal to have some of those internal mentors as well, who I always say, look for people who are doing what you want to be doing. Like, if you could aspire to a role or a position or an impact that they made, like, that makes a really good mentor. And especially if you love the organization that you're with, like, find somebody there who can help keep you afloat. Because sometimes you like the duck analogy, the duck swimming in water, the swan swimming in water, like, very calm up front, but the little feet are moving really, really fast. And sometimes it feels like only the feet are moving fast. And it's nice to have some of those people that can keep the waters calm for you.
I know that obviously you're part of the CEBA mentorship program, and we strive to plug you into people. So that's an easy one, right? Getting those mentors from CEBA mentorship. Mm-hmm. Outside of the CEBA mentorship program, give some succinct advice on how does one find and approach a mentor? I know that some people struggle with that.
This is very much an extroverted way to go about it, but I'm avid on LinkedIn, very active. I enjoy, again, connecting, community, talking with others. I have just followed people on LinkedIn or connected with people on LinkedIn who there is something about them that I aspire to be or aspire to learn more about. And I just sent them a message and said, hey, so-and-so.
Oh, you do more than just push the connect button?
Yeah.
I'm saying that with extreme sarcasm, because I get people all the time, they just push the button and then I have to figure out how we should connect or not. But if you just type a message in there and say, hey, I'm a fellow Laker, or I'm a student looking for, and never, I've always had success with just saying, I need help. And then this is why, right? I connected with you because you're a fellow Laker. So I keep telling students, stop playing the lottery with LinkedIn and just pushing connect or pushing apply and start actually sending a message that says, oh, I'm connecting with you, Jillian, because I'm a fellow Laker and I see that you're an innovation and something I'm interested in. I don't know much about it. Could we please connect? Or even tell you why you're going to connect, because I don't want to sign up for, you know, necessarily. Can we chat for, you know, half an hour or something?
Yeah, I always just reach out. The worst that happens is they say no or they don't answer. And somebody who says no is probably not somebody that you would want to connect with anyways.
Good point.
So that is the extroverted way of how I go about it. And obviously, like I said, I join, you know, your local chamber of commerce, the economic club. There's tons of professional groups that exist industry-wide, region-wide to join. So you can go to those and usually get assigned like an ambassador when you're a new member in some of these. And they can kind of lead you around. So that's potentially a really phenomenal way for more of an introvert to join a local community thing, get assigned like a networking buddy, and then you can slowly start to integrate into that and find people that match what you're looking for.
It's like you haven't read the questions, but it's like you're teeing them up. So, question from our audience: what channels did you use to find your job? And when should I start looking for that job?
So I just was in the right place at the right time.
I doubt that. I bet you set it up somehow. You just didn't realize you set it up.
Well, I just lived at the CEI and I wanted an interesting job that allowed that. So eventually somebody interesting was bound to walk through there.
If I sit in the boat and I fish long enough,
you're bound to get a fish.
I'm going to catch a fish. But if I sit home, I'm not going to catch fish. So this is an underutilized, and where you spend your time. I talk to students quite often about your friend groups, right? Mm-hmm. If I spend all my time at the Alpha Beta Whoopity House, that's where my network is. And I'm not saying you can't join a frat. I've done business. I've told the story on prior podcasts. Like, I met some of the hardest partying people at Grand Valley who turned out to be VPs of companies. And when we met later professionally, the look on their face said, please don't bring up the party at the Alpha Beta Whoopity House because we're not professionals and we're supposed to act like it. And I didn't. And it was all fine. But then I also had a one-up and they were obligated to buy from me, which was great. But by spending your time at the CEI with other entrepreneurs and students, where you spend your time matters, right? Mm-hmm. And what your friend group is matters. So please continue.
And I am very aware that most of my advice as a more extroverted person tends to come from that lens. But for me, I had the most success in finding jobs and internships in person, having conversations, being at a company and just asking if, you know, they had something or like put it into the universe.
How did you
get
to be at a company?
What was that?
How did you get to be at a company?
One internship was, and it's kind of teed up to what I was leading into, is like ask and the universe will send it to you somehow, some way. It all put it out there, manifested, and it just increases the likelihood that the right ears hear it. But one internship came through a warm introduction. It was during the pandemic. I was striking out at any corporate position because everybody was laying off or just not hiring. And I wanted an internship. I still wanted to work and do something over the summer. And that's when I took the opportunity to pursue my curiosity in event planning a little bit more professionally than just doing it on the side or doing it at my family's companies. And my mom reached out to a network that she knew, and that network returned back, and her internship had just quit on her like the week before wedding season. And I warm introduced to her, hey, I'm Jillian, you know, so-and-so sent me your posting that you're looking for a job, and I would, you know, love to have the opportunity to apply for it. Another internship came kind of on the fly. I was just shopping like a girl does, and I was looking for some sort of sales and management internship, but I wanted to be close by to my family for particular reasons that summer. And this store was hiring for sales and management internships. And just in striking up that conversation with the manager there, they offered me the position in the interview, and that's how that happened. And then my current role now, again, I was sitting in the CEI. They were working with an entrepreneur at the CEI at the time, Thomas Koch. And I was just, again, talking about how I can't find a job that aligns with my values, that's interesting to me, that I would be passionate about, and right place, right time, spoke it into the universe in a way. And they were offered, they're like, well, we have, you know, some open positions. Sounds like it could be a fit I can send you, you know, the job descriptions and let me know if it fits and we can set up a time to interview. So I feel like I'm a really bad example. I did go through the LinkedIns and the Indeeds and going to career fairs, but I had the most success when personal relationships were built to get the job.
I call LinkedIn, Indeed. I call that playing the lottery. Like, I literally had a wonderful student, but an introvert, call me, just graduated, and said, I can't get a job. And I said, well, what have you done? Well, I applied to 90 jobs on LinkedIn. I said, oh, you're playing the lottery. You're not connecting.
Yeah.
And that connection makes a difference. I love what you said about speaking to the universe, because rather than networking, which I hate, connecting, I tell people, when you want something, tell everybody about it. Mm-hmm. I had a dream that I wanted to fly a jet. which I have no business doing because I'm a private prop pilot, right? So I have a private pilot's license to fly little Cessnas.
Mm-hmm.
2 years ago, somebody showed me the, in my opinion, coolest, sexiest jet that ever was built, the single engine SF-50 Cirrus Vision. Look it up. It's awesome. I saw one at an air show, static display. I went up and I said, what would it take? What would I have to do to fly this? Well, it takes about $4.8 million. I said, okay, great. How about a test drive? And that's like going to the Lamborghini dealership and asking for a drive the Lamborghini. And they're like, haha, no. Fast forward 2 years, I got invited by an instructor pilot to go to a grand opening for a new business. I didn't want to go because it was after work and I was tired. And I'm like, yeah, this is going to be dumb. It's going to be a bunch of rich, snobby airplane people. I actually went and found it was a family-owned business. Ended up talking to one of the owners. In the back of the hangar is this big, black, sleek, sexy, single-engine Cirrus Vision jet. And I said to the universe, I've always wanted to fly one of those. And they said, oh, we can make that happen. I said, no, you can't. The next week, I was in the front seat. They put an instructor pilot in with me to make sure I didn't do anything dumb. And I paid a rental fee.
Yeah.
And I got to do that. But speaking to the universe, I tell people, tell everybody
mm-hmm.
what you're doing. Make sure you share this with your family, with extended family, your aunts, your uncles. You never know where that connection is going to come up. You know, strike up those conversations. I know. You and I, raging extroverts, introverts, like, there's no way, Jerry, I'm talking to somebody in the grocery store about what I want to do. But you'd be surprised.
Yeah.
I'm famous for going around campus and poor students have their earbuds in and I say hello to people because I want this idea that Grand Valley is this campus where we're home for a lot of people, right? And I like the idea that we're open and welcoming.
Yeah.
Moving on. Advice for students on getting noticed by employers prior to graduating and getting job offers pre-graduation. I think a lot of students feel like if I don't have this laid out by the time I graduate, how can you walk across the stage at graduation? I had this fear.
Yeah.
I took a job that I probably shouldn't have right before because I wanted to check off, okay, the next thing I need to do is get a job so that my parents can shut up about, did you get a job? Everybody in my life, everybody's sitting around, your seniors are like, what job did you get? What job did you get? What job did you get?
Yeah.
Okay, good. You know, and that ruins boot night right, for those of you who are going to boot night, right? If we sit around, we're talking about this. What's your advice on getting noticed?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, first and foremost, I was that student too that just was absolutely defeated and totally overtaken by the feeling and the stress of needing that next step confirmed. Because again, we're used to school. We know what happens next and it's always solidified before it ends, the phase that you're in ends. So it's a very natural tendency to be coming up senior year and feeling the weight of needing to have that next step confirmed. So for students, I think a huge regret of mine was that I stayed way too bogged down in that stress and too focused on what that next step was. And same thing, I was taking any and every interview that I could get because I needed that to be confirmed before I walked the stage. And I remember there was a career fair and I went home after it and I called my mom and I was just absolutely distressed. I'm like, I've interviewed with these companies. Nothing really seems like a good fit or the industry isn't interesting. I'm never going to find a job. What do I do? And A, sometimes you just need to call your mom or call your friend or call your somebody that you can go to when that hits and get it out from your head before it snowballs into more. But know that you don't need to have that confirmed the day you walk the stage. I have so many friends who waited for the right opportunity and a lot of friends who would do an internship that summer that then turned into a job. And sometimes internships with the newer industry or newer company is a nice transition from school to professional. And then you start to get to learn the organization and kind of what those paths are a little bit more organically than applying to these entry-level roles that toss you right into it. So first and foremost, because I was that student, please don't be that student. I promise it'll all work out. But as far as getting noticed, I think a huge portion of that is kind of starting to develop what your personal professional brand is going to be. What do you want to be noticed for? I think is the first question. And college is a great opportunity to explore that. And it's as simple as how do you want to dress and speak and present yourself when you walk into a room? What is the energy that you want to evoke? How do you want to be remembered? And again, how do you want to be noticed first? Because if you don't know how you want to be noticed or why you want to be noticed besides just getting a job with a paycheck, then I think you're kind of chasing something aimlessly a little bit. So figure out why you want to be noticed and what you want to be noticed for. And then be present, I think, is huge. I think the pandemic was a hindrance to many because we got very used and comfortable to being on a screen and being digital. And that's, you don't make relationships that way. Management 101 classes, you go over what's the most efficient way to communicate. And technology is last. It's face-to-face. It's sound. It's visuals. I forget the number, but there's like so many muscles just in your eyebrows that can portray an emotion. And it's hard to connect with people when you lose all of that. So be present and show up when Grand Valley has career fairs, especially when they're tabling. Tabling, at least for me, I would get very overwhelmed by the career fair. And I am an extrovert because I didn't have any direction. And when you have direction, it's a little bit easier to navigate. But the tabling in schools or in Kirkhoff was much easier for me to go up and approach somebody and just be present and start to show up and become a familiar face to some of these folks. Again, LinkedIn, start to post about what you're doing in school and reach out to companies, people in those roles, HR recruiters, like just start to reach out and, hey, I'm Jillian. I'm, you know, majoring in entrepreneurship. I'm really interested in your organization and graduating soon. Just kind of wanted to reach out and say hi. And I know, again, Jerry's smiling because it's so extroverted.
Because I teach name story tour, right? You find a name of somebody, you say, hey, Jillian, I saw your post. I'd love to hear your story about how you ended up becoming a consultant for Winehouse. You know, would you be willing to spend some time, the tour part, either letting me see what you do, come to your office, shadow you for half a day, whatever. And
yeah.
Again, if you ask and they say nothing, then it's probably not a great connection anyway. And sometimes we have to ask more than once. It's you know, you and I are raging extroverts. We could do that. But, you know, if you're an introvert, there's a way to think through this too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you teed it up again. It's just like you're reading the script, even though you didn't. Interview advice about dressing professionally. Get this a lot, and fitting in a professional space is the question from the audience. And I'm smiling because I've heard you speak about this very thing in classes.
So I'm a complete weirdo, and I found interviews to be really fun. I don't know why that is, and it always gets some strange looks when I say that, so I can only imagine what people listening to this.
For me, it's a headspace, right? So if I go in, hey, I'm interviewing you. You happen to be talking to me, but I'm the wolf in the room. Like,
yeah.
You need me as the employee as much as I need you. Mm-hmm. So if I go in with that mentality, I've just changed the tables in my mind. It's just my thinking.
Yeah.
Rather than, I think a lot of people go in and go, they have all the power. Mm-hmm. They get to make the decision and I'm the victim here. No, you're a co-participant in this.
Yeah.
You know? And that mindset always helped me.
Yeah, absolutely. That's something, and I don't even remember where that advice came from when it came to intern, looking for internships and interviewing. Probably was you. But like... When I headed into it, again, as I mentioned when we started, like, I always really look to fill my time with meaningful, purposeful, cup-filling things. Like, how I'm spending my time, you have one life to live, and you should spend that time doing something that means something to you. So before the advice and the head shift even was brought to my attention to me to actually, like, actively think about when I was in interviews, I always saw it as an opportunity of, is this somewhere that I want to work at anyways? Like, I'm going to answer the questions, and I was always nervous of answering them correctly and showing off my skills. But at the same time, like any time that somebody, every interview is going to ask you of questions for me, and everybody's answer should always be yes. It should always, 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 always be yes. Either a curiosity you have about the company, a question about one of your values or your goals, or like for me, a question I always asked, and this to me showed the type of company that I was interviewing with was, you know, I want to find a company that will invest in me, that I can grow with, Like, I want to succeed in my role and be with this company. What does that look like? What does that support? What does that mentorship look like for somebody in my position with this aspiration? And again, mentorship's huge to me. And how interviewers would answer that question was revealing for me of if this is somewhere I wanted to be or not. Because if I'm going to invest my time, I want to be invested into.
Talk about professional dress in the professional work environment, because I know this is a struggle. And yeah. I have people ask me all the time, or I have students, especially I think for women and for men, get a suit, dame over, you're done. And then get like, you know, get a suit jacket, a pair of pants, and then you get six different shirts, six different ties. You have a mix and match, and you're done. It's very easy.
Yeah.
But talk to the ladies out there for professional dress.
Yeah, I think professional wear goes with your brand. Like, how do you want to be perceived? Do you want to be the person that's always in a full suit? Are you always the person in a button up? Like, what is that? What do you want that to be? And it's different every industry too. Every industry has different expectations of how to present yourself, and even how to present yourself just in the office versus a client. So some of that professional dress is situational, but my first advice is always to be comfortable in what you're wearing. In terms of, if confidence comes from, like, look good, do good, feel good is always my phrase. And if I look good and I feel confident in what I'm doing, I'm setting myself up to do better than if I was in a stuffy suit that I didn't feel confident in and was walking into this meeting shaking and in my heels that I can't walk in. Like, that's not a great professional look. Even though you're in the heels and you have the suit on and the jacket and all of that, it's not benefiting you in your role. So I always dress for the occasion and dress for confidence. In terms of, like, actually what to wear, I am always just a proponent of dress pants and a nice top. And you can't really go wrong with that in any situation. The work from home has created much more comfortable dress pants than I think there used to be. So that's a plus in having to wear that. But I am always a pants and a top person. Personally, I'm uncomfortable in a dress and a skirt in professional settings. So for me, wearing that type of clothing doesn't support my confidence. So I don't wear it. I'm always in my pants. I'm short, so I do wear heels when I need the extra confident boost, because for some reason height makes me feel more confident. and if it's cold, have a jacket. I'm always a pro for, like, a buttonless jacket. I think that looks professional without looking stuffy, because sometimes I put on a suit jacket and I just feel stuffed in it, or, like, I feel too masculine in it. And I think for me, something that I had to learn too was you can be professional and still be feminine in how you dress and respectable. I have a power suit. Everybody needs a power suit. Find that. Invest
where do
in
you
a
find, where do you really find the power suit. Do you have a brand? Do you have a website? Where does one find? Can I put power suit into Amazon and get a power suit? I don't know.
You might end up with, like, a banana yellow suit if you put that in Amazon.
I honestly don't know. So,
speaking of bananas, though, I love Banana Republic. Hmm. They used to have a student discount. So when my actual power suit was from Banana Republic, or still is from Banana Republic. Other phenomenal resources. Old Navy. I have a lot from Old Navy. I have friends that shop at Old Navy. That's it, especially, like, on a college budget. And now the Banana Republic got rid of the college discount. Maybe this podcast can bring it back.
And my spouse said, it was over the holiday weekend, said, oh, I just got to, can we go out and grab something to eat? I need to stop by Old Navy to return something. It'll take a minute. It'll take a minute. And I joined the rest of the spouses.
Waiting.
like literally me and this other guy, he was, like, totally on his phone. He's just trying to find a space to hide. He's just, yeah. He is in purgatory. And then my spouse starts shopping, right? And I'm like, okay, I know where this is. I'll get mine. And we did that. And we took forever. And then when I got out of spousal jail with the rest of the spouses, we got lunch. And I said, oh, yeah, on the way home, let's stop at Cabela's. Huh? Huh? That's my equivalent of now you. You can. I just need to look at a few things. Sorry, it was my tangent.
You're fine.
We're bringing back Banana Republic, Old Navy. Heard
yes.
You.
And I think women, it's more commonly found than men, but boutiques. I love shopping at boutiques. Mm. A, I'm always looking to support smaller businesses. Coming from a small business family, Hello Fancy in the Metro Detroit area is my favorite. Phenomenal ownership. And again, like, it's something coming from a small business family. Like, if I can support a small business, mm-hmm. I am always going to choose that first. And sometimes it's just, it can be uncomfortable shopping for professional clothes and you're nervous, and those boutiques can be a little bit more comfortable and you get some one-on-one time with one of the workers who can help outfit you, and they know the clothing that they have because they only have a select amount, so they can help pick ones that fit your body type or match your industry. So I love boutiques too, or small businesses to shop at for professional clothes.
Another question. How do you compare your workload as a student to your workload as a full-time employee in the workplace? And I feel like this is a loaded question to ask you because I swear you and Alina Leidewig were the two busiest students I have ever met. Like, literally, I think in any mentoring conversation I have with either of you, I sat you down and I said, okay,
yep.
Are you having any fun? Because you guys are so busy. So I almost feel like you're going to say it was easier doing a job than it was than being a student.
There's differences between what's easy and what's hard, being a student and being professional. Workload, it's honestly probably the same. Like, I was at one point, I think I had 21 credit hours. So
you did that once. Not, yeah. I don't recommend it.
So like in terms of like what the actual workload and hours dedicated, it for me is probably equivalent. Speaking just from chatting with other friends of mine who graduated and went through the transition themselves, there's always an onboarding and on-ramping period. You aren't hired into a role fresh out of college expected to be at the level of a director or a VP. There's a ramp-up period for you. And most companies or companies that you'd want to be working at allow space for that ramp-up period and grace to learn and offer support to get there. So if you're worried about, if that question's coming from a place of worry of, oh my gosh, it's going to be more work, there's time to get there. And then again, it's a different type of work, for me at least, my experience from school to professional. There's more responsibility in the work that I'm producing because now my output's going towards a client and my advice and my research is impacting their business. So I feel a little bit more weight in what I do professionally because for school, you're doing it for yourself. You're achieving.
You are the client.
Yes. Like what your inputs and outputs, you are the person on the receiving end of that. Where now you're a part of another company too and portraying their level of work. And so for me, the hardest part of the transition wasn't the workload itself. It was where the work was going that I was doing and the importance of the output because it's, if I mess up, I just mess up for me. Now, if I mess up, it's impacting the company, it's impacting my team, it's impacting the client.
So I'm hearing, though, about the same amount of hours mm-hmm. as it was in school.
Probably. In my case, yes.
Hmm. All right. Time to get really serious. What was the hardest part of transitioning from being a full-time student to a professional? Hardest.
Oh, my gosh.
Picking the hard one.
Being comfortable with the learning curve. And it's still, I'm 2 years out of it. And that's still the hardest part for me is giving myself grace to be good at something entirely new. And I didn't think it would be as hard or it would take as long to ramp up as it is because in school, I was a nerd. I love school. And that caused
you
me
were
to be
a rock star.
A high performer.
You were the highest of the high performers. I'm just going to go ahead and plug you again. Like, go back, rewind to the beginning of the podcast. You are absolutely the top of the top of your game as far as what we measure. That's academics, mm-hmm. right? You are the best of the best.
Yeah, and I attach myself to my output. So my results is my self-worth and value, which is a very toxic thing, in all honesty. And in entering a role in new space, new industries, and my background in entrepreneurship and innovation is very scrappy with the family I came from. Just everything was bootstrapped from the ground up. You blood, sweat, and tears into it. I went to college to formalize the experience, but for me too, along with the ramp up, was the confidence in myself that I deserve to be here and that I am good enough to be in this role. And the hardest part for me in my experience was maintaining my confidence as I'm going through that learning curve of everything that's new.
So let's transition to, I want you to do some plugs, please. What do you want to plug?
What do I want to plug? If you need wedding planning, Grandin Wells Events.
how do we contact Grandin Wells?
Our website, grandinwells.co, or on Instagram at Grandin Wells. So full time, I am in software innovation. I am the part of the growth team, and then project wise, I work a lot on more of the operations and business aspects. So if somebody is looking for a new software, innovation, an app, if you're still using pen and paper processes, I would love to build a cool project with you. And more exciting plugs, go to your professor's office hours.
I love that.
Utilize the resources at your disposal that you have at school. Business-wise, get involved in clubs. Oh, my goodness. Because clubs are the perfect bridge from academic to the professional world. I was personally a part of the economic club at Grand Valley. I was part of the CEO club, which is not, you do not have to be a CEO or an entrepreneur to be in the club. It is just a business professional club. I hung out again at the CEI. So speaking just for business, that was where I was. I have tons of friends that were part of IPO and absolutely love that experience. And it's a regret of mine that I actually didn't end up joining that. But I would definitely plug those organizations that really get students connected to professionals. And it allows you to take what you're learning in the class and apply it in a safe and learning environment.
And finally, why do the Seedman Mentorship Program?
Nobody does the best work alone. And in joining the program, mentorship is a two-way street. And the moment that you take that into consideration is when you can actually unlock the power of mentorship and all that it can provide for you. I think from a student perspective, you should join because it's hard, it's tough to navigate alone all of this. And it's nice to have a resource and somebody to go to for help. It's a safe environment to learn and make mistakes. And as a upperclassman student, you really get the best of both worlds. You get to experience being a mentor to a student. And I always walk away from those relationships feeling guilty, like I didn't do enough mentoring because they mentored me so much back. So many times they're going through something or curious about something that I kind of need the reminder myself about. And it's kind of a good checkpoint. And that transitions me into professionals. Join the program because, A, it's a very fulfilling thing to do, to know that you're helping somebody's career get started. And you can be a source of support for somebody who's really scared, because it is scary to make the transition. And no matter how confident the front is that you put on, it's a big change. It's a big shift. So the mentorship program, I think from every angle that you look at it, is valuable and meaningful and just exciting to be a part of, especially with it growing. Like, you're a part of something new and you get to really see the impact that you have every day.
We are seeing the impact you are doing every day. And Jillian, it's been an honor to be part of your voyage at Grand Valley. I am extremely proud of the work you've done, the transition. I'm always humbled by your sharing, your vulnerability, and your constant giving to whatever it is you're doing. and how much you've given to the program. I mean, the Seaman Mentorship Program as it exists today does not exist without your involvement. You guys, I got a chance to mentor a few of you, not really specifically, but I definitely got so much from, probably more than you guys know that I was definitely giving to you. So you helped build the program, so you have a legacy here for that. To add to all your other accolades I read off. And we're really proud of you and wish you all the best. And thank you so much for coming in today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. And I'm here to be a part of the program as long as you'll let me stick around for it.
Well, we're going to keep calling on you for as long as you're willing to participate, and we appreciate
Sounds
you.
Good. Bye.
Thank you for sailing along on this episode of the Seaman Mentorship Podcast. For more information on the Seaman College of Business Mentorship Program at Grand Valley State University, look us up on your favorite search engine. If you have a story to tell, know someone we should interview, have questions or comments, please email us at smp@gvsu.edu. Until next time, keep a weathered eye on the horizon, and we wish you fair winds. So long.